Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, did you ever begin a task thinking you would get result X, only to discover result Y came along and the result was even better? My next guest thinks that being open to experimentation is the key to business success. So it's great to welcome Paul Sloan. He's the author of The Art of the Unexpected Solutions, Using Lateral Thinking to Find Breakthroughs, to the show. Thank you, Paul. How are you?
Great to be with you.
Now, tell us about this book. I know you're an author of many books. You're an expert facilitator on innovation and lateral thinking. So maybe tell us a little bit about the culture that is experimentation. And this would be, I suppose, allowing people in organizations to make decisions, you know, that sometimes would have mixed outcomes, but not to do it in a way that they're not threatened by it.
Yeah, so the book is all about the unexpected and how the unexpected shapes our lives and how you can foster the unexpected and get better results from it, both at a business level and at a personal level. And if you look back on your life, you'll see that many of the most interesting things, the turning points in your life, were often the result of unexpected occurrences, a chance meeting. You bumped into an old pal that you hadn't seen for a long time. You were made redundant from one job and then found something that was better. You may have met your partner through a random or chance event. So the unexpected plays a much bigger role in our lives than we give it credit for. And the question is, can we welcome more unexpected and can we benefit from it?
And the unexpected, we've got many examples. I know you talk about Airbnb and photographs that they used. You also talk about 3M, I think it was, the development of the Post-it, that these kind of businesses have a culture where they allow employees to do kind of off-piece stuff, to go and spend 10% of their time coming up with new ideas, random ideas, some that will work, some that won't.
Well, a lot of companies encourage employees to try things, and some do it deliberately. So Booking.com, the travel company, runs over 25,000 experiments, tests every year. They're always trying different approaches on their website to see what works. The A-B tests, or try two different things live, the same variants, and they see which works, and then they go for that, and then they'll try variants on that. So they're constantly experimenting. And many companies discourage this. Many companies say to the people that work for them, keep your head down, focus on doing your job, deliver the results. And those people may have some great ideas for better ways to do things, but they're not encouraged to experiment, to try them. Because if they try them, very often the first time they try it, it will fail. But one of the people I quote in the book says there's no such thing as a failed experiment. If you learn from it, then it's a success.
Yeah. You also say that experiment without measurement is just trial and error, and it can lead to opinion-driven decision-making, which I thought was quite interesting.
Yeah, so experiments should have a purpose and they should have a measurable outcome, if at all possible. It's not always possible, but very often it is, particularly in business. So experimentation is really important, but even more important is creating an atmosphere of psychological safety where people feel safe to come up with unorthodox ideas and to challenge the orthodoxies and the assumptions that underpin the business today. And you need people to be able to do that without fear of ridicule or criticism.
But is not the sort of harsh, practical reality that if somebody embraces or comes up with an idea or a project and it fails and they end up getting fired, that the next guy isn't going to be so likely to put his hand up and say, well, here I am with a new project. Like,
exactly
the reality of it is somewhat different, is it not, in many businesses?
It is. And leaders can send signals which are very powerful. They can either encourage people to come forward with ideas or to discourage them. And even just a laugh, a snigger, a mild criticism can send a message, I don't want your ideas. I know best. Do it my way.
So then like if you're in a culture such as that, where you are threatened by coming up with a new idea or a new innovation, and it's going to be shot down, how do you change that? Do you have to change the leader?
Well, the change of the leader is one way, but the leader themselves, once they recognise the problem, that the culture is risk-averse and conservative, they can take actions. And a couple of very powerful things the leader can do are these. First of all, the leader can talk about failures in his or her career. The leader can say, when I was younger, I tried this and we had this and it was a big failure. You know, we spent all this money and we tried. But what we learned was this. And then we went on a different path and we did something better. So that's one thing they can do. The other thing they can do, which is very powerful, is to praise somebody for trying something that didn't work. So Louise here, she tried this thing with the customer. She went to this and she provided something new. It didn't work, but we learned something from it. And that's the kind of initiative I want to see around here. And people say he's praising Louise for something that didn't work, for a failure. And it sends a message that you're allowed to try things if they're for the benefit of customers, benefit of the business. And if they don't work, but we learn from them and you share that learning, then that is good. So praising people for success is really important. But praising someone for trying something that didn't work is a really powerful thing that a leader can do in an all-company meeting, which sends a powerful message.
Many of your examples, Paul, cite big organizations such as Booking.com, as you mentioned, Airbnb. What about smaller businesses, like that maybe don't have the luxury of being able to make a mistake, that are maybe walking a financial kind of tightrope, that if, you know, that they just don't have the bandwidth or the financial resources to take those kind of risks? Is that another reality that you're sometimes confronted with?
And very often a small business is founded by someone who's very dynamic, a go-getter, decisive, and they surround themselves with people who do things and they make all the decisions. But and most of the decisions are right because they're smart, but they run into a roadblock because they're the bottleneck for everything. Everything has to go through them. Every decision has to be signed off by them. And they can be the problem. And they have to learn to let go and delegate and let people take some responsibility and try things. And it's not easy, but it's a transition they have to go through if they're going to grow the business.
Tell me a little bit about Build, Measure, Learn Loop, which you signed. I'm calling it the BMLL, just to put an acronym on it. And this is in your book, is the...
Yeah, they need an experiment and a framework for experimentation where you deliberately try different things and you encourage people to try things. But if you're going to do that, you have to give them some bandwidth. You have to give them some time and a small budget. And the minimum viable product is the great idea which Eric Ries came up with in his book, the Lean Startup. And he talks about when you want to try an idea and somebody comes to you and they say, we want to try this idea, boss. And you say, how much will it cost to build a prototype? And they say, it's going to cost £20,000 or €20,000. What you say to them is, what can you do for £3,000? And they say, well, just I can build a mock-up and I can do some screenshots and I can do a wireframe and show it. And you say, do that. And the minimum viable product is where you come up with the absolute smallest, crappiest version of the new idea, but something you can show to customers, which shows the concept. And when you show it to customers, and you choose the customers who are forward-thinking to show it to, they'll say, well, I like this, but this doesn't work, and you've got this wrong. And instead of wasting money building something that was wrong in the first place, you've learned something very quickly. So you move to a minimum viable product as quickly as possible.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And you also then, when you do that, you decide whether to scale, refine or abandon the idea. There's a clear clear end.
Yes. And you have to abandon a lot of ideas. Innovation involves trying lots of things, many of which don't work.
What about things that didn't work before and someone comes forward and somebody says, oh, we tried that before and it didn't work? Is there a way of energizing old ideas into new ideas? Is that something that you've come across?
Yes, it's very true. And very often you come up with an idea in a brainstorm and you'll say, why don't we do this for customers? And somebody said, well, we tried that 18 months ago and it didn't work. And the answer is, not like this you didn't. And we've got a different approach and times have moved on. And what was true 18 months ago is no longer true today. And what was false 18 months ago can now be true. So things are changing all the time. You know, the idea for the computer came around with Babbage in the 1800s. And of course, the technology wasn't there. He couldn't do any of it. But the times have moved on, and we've got technologies, and we've got AI, and we've got all sorts of things today that we didn't have before. And the customer expectations have changed. COVID changed people's attitude to working from home and getting deliveries at home. So all sorts of things have changed, which means that ideas that didn't work in the past may be worth trying again. It doesn't mean they're guaranteed to work at all, but look at it and try it. And old ideas are sometimes worth retrying.
I love that. Thank you, Paul. That's great. I really enjoyed that conversation. That's Paul Sloan there. He's the author of The Art of Unexpected Solutions, Using Lateral Thinking to Find Breakthroughs. Thank you very much, Paul. That was great.
Thank you very much.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.